Chicago Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. Happy Sunday. Welcome to The Beat. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Jared Payton. Jared, say hi so I know I can see you and hear you and feel you. Are you there?
Yes. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a great day for the Chicago Bears so far. I'm very excited. I know you are as well, because at 5-6, we're all dreaming playoffs. And we can update you right at the start of the show. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are losing to the Indianapolis Colts 25-12. That is good news for your Chicago Bears, as the Bucs came in today with a record of 5-5. You want Tampa Bay losing in the NFC, and you wanted Atlanta losing, and they did, as the Vikings win again 20-10. Minnesota is for real. Jared Payton, before we set anything up, are you feeling Bears playoff love on this Sunday?
You know how much I love the Bears, and as much as I'm excited for, you know, what's to come, especially after that big win over the Packers, I'm still holding back a little bit, Carm. I'm just going to sit back and watch this team build. I don't want to say playoffs yet, because I just know that this, I don't know if this team is ready for it. Well, I know they're not ready for it, but I want to see them keep getting better and better over this year as it goes on. But, you know, if they get to the playoffs, I'll be happy. I'm a Bears fan.
See, now hold on a second. And by the way, the Beat is here till 6 o'clock. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That is the phone line. That is the text line. You can tweet us, at the Carm is yours truly, and you are at Peyton Son, S-O-N. By the way, there's a tremendous gift for you that Mike Jacobson has for you, Jared Payton. I don't know. Jack, what are you willing to tell JP that you have for Jared? Because this is really, really cool, and I'd like to completely blow the surprise right now, but I'm going to let you, because it's your gift. I shouldn't do that.
Do not blow the surprise, but it is a very cool gift. So next, I thought, hopefully we were trying to get Jared. I know he's on ISDN today, but we're going, next time I see him, I have a very special gift for you, JP. You're
going to
love it.
It's about the coolest thing I've ever seen, so you should be super excited. But going back to what you just said, sir, the Bears have been incredibly competitive with some of the best teams in the NFL. They could have beaten the Broncos. They go up to Green Bay and win, and maybe Green Bay's a little bit down. Defense is playing better. Cuddy's having a great year. JP, I feel like anything is possible.
Yeah, I think we need to slow down just a little bit, though, Carm. You know how much I love this team, man. I bleed the Bears' colors. I mean, it's just a part of me, but I just want this team. I'm still looking forward to the future, and my expectations coming into this year weren't that high. So what I'm seeing right now is great out of this team, but I think you have to build after having a big signature win like John Fox and this regime just got over the Packers. So just sit back, relax. I don't want to get too excited, but I'm excited to watch this team play well, and but they did almost they just beat the Raiders. Come on now, man. They've been so hot and cold this season.
I wouldn't say they've been hot and cold. I just, you know, they've won close games and they've lost close games, right? I mean, they're 3-3. They pulled out a win against the Raiders. They pulled out a win against the Chiefs. They lost a game to the Lions they shouldn't have lost. They lost a game to the Vikings that they shouldn't have lost. But they've been right there. And as much as I don't like listening to John Fox speak, because he doesn't want to speak to us, and it kind of rankles me that he is so distant from the fan base and from the media, the guy knows what he's doing, right? I mean, they're going to get every ounce of talent out of there, and not just John Fox. I mean, Vic Fangio could be a candidate to be a head coach somewhere, although I don't really see that in his personality. Adam Gase, I think, is definitely going to be a head coach, if not after this year, certainly sometime down the line. I mean, they got a really good staff over there that's getting everything out of these guys, and they do have, I think, more talent than people realized.
Yeah, I'm with you, but you start to look at the rest of the games. I mean, you do have a good chance. You have the 49ers coming up, then you have the Redskins, and then the Vikings, who, I mean, defensively, it's something about the Vikings, and watching Adrian Peterson today just go off. I mean, he looked like the old AP of a couple years ago. And then, you know, you have the Bucks, where it's always going to be a game, because you got to go against Lovey. And the Lions, you don't know who they are, but looking at them just this past game, they offensively, they gotten better too. So you have to keep making steps. I think if you can get to the playoffs, anything can happen, but you have to get there first.
29 carries, 158 yards, a couple of touchdowns today for AD all day, Adrian Peterson. The Vikings, I mean, nobody wants to give them much credit, but they are most definitely for real. Let's a couple other scores, I guess, as we're starting here. And we're going to have Dave Ennett on to the bottom of the hour. Pat Fitzgerald with some interesting tweets. We'll do that in 5 minutes about his Northwestern Wildcats and where they belong as far as the bowl scenario is concerned. And that, as we won't find out that out for a little while, but it was interesting to see Fitz being so vocal about what his Cats deserve. The Raiders beat the Titans today 24-21. Chiefs over the Bills 30-22. Kansas City once was gone at 1-5. They've won 4 in a row and look like they actually may be a playoff team. We already mentioned the Colts and the Bucks 25-12 in the fourth quarter. Indy salting that one away. Redskins 20, the Giants 14. One of those teams had to lose today, which is fine. That just went final too. So Washington's 5-6. The Giants are 5-6. That's good for the Bears. Listen, you got five teams in the NFC that are over 500. So us talking playoffs here, it's not crazy. Chargers over the Jaguars, 31-19. That's late in the fourth. That doesn't matter at all. Neither does the Jets and Dolphins, but New York a winner, 35-14. Brandon Marshall continuing to have a solid season. Texans over the Saints, 24-6. And tonight's Sunday nighter should be very interesting, as you have the Patriots and the Broncos and Brock Osweiler and New England trying to stay perfect. Before we take a quick timeout, JP, do you think that either New England or Carolina will end up the season undefeated going into the playoffs?
I would, if I had to put my money on it, I'd probably put the Patriots, just because of, even with the injuries, it still seems like you have the best quarterback in the NFL right now in Tom Brady, and he finds ways to get guys that are around him, whether you know their name or not, to be successful in that offense. And they always find ways to plug people in on the offensive side. Defensively, I think they can get it done. Both teams are playing outstanding right now, but I might have to put my money on the Pats.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right, coming back here, we'll get into a little college football. The bowl scenarios, Northwestern with 10 wins after beating Illinois, and Illinois' interesting decision to keep Bill Cubitt as their head coach on a 2-year extension. Also some stuff on Les Miles down at LSU and Mark Richt at Georgia. And I got beef with college football, JP. I just do. This week on Chicago's Best, get ready for a fiesta, because Brittany, who Jarrett knows a little bit, and Elliot are going to find the best Mexican eats and treats. Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. The Beat with you till 6 o'clock on 720 WGN.
It's kind of like where we're at college football playoff ranking. I mean, I saw a team ranked X amount of spots ahead of us that we beat. I just don't get it. I mean, pop on the tape and watch the film. I mean, our kids dominated that game, and I don't think they get any credit. And, you know, we didn't win by 50 today, so we'll continue to get disrespected from that standpoint. But we played a very competitive schedule. We had two bumps in the road, played two Power 5 teams that are both playing in the postseason. And I think our performance, our resume speaks for itself. So I look forward to watching the College Football Playoff Committee get it right here over the next 2 weeks. I know they will. I trust them.
Ooh, I don't know, Fitz. I like what you're saying. I like what you're doing. But as far as that committee, quote-unquote, getting it right, money speaks, money talks. That's the life of college football. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Jarrett Payton. This is The Beat with you till 6 o'clock on 720 WGN. JP, what do you think of that Northwestern resume?
Well, first, let me tell you this.
Yes, sir.
Coach Fitz, I appreciate it, because I like him when he speaks his mind. And you start looking at what the resume of this Northwestern team and what they've done. I'm with you. I mean, it's hard because of how this whole new everything is kind of situated now with the college football playoff. And I think it's great having these four teams. But even watching over the last couple of weeks, though, you kind of look and you go, what's this all about? And you said something at the beginning about money talks. But actually, I don't know if it does anymore, because in that conversation, Notre Dame, I thought, would be, even with that one loss before they lost to Stanford, would be up there because of just how they travel and what Notre Dame would mean to the playoff. And then I see them get kicked out and get jumped by Oklahoma and Iowa, and you start to think a little bit. It's like, And Northwestern, they played well. And to have 10 wins on a season was the first time they've done that since 1995. This has been a good season for this Wildcat team, and I've actually enjoyed watching them play.
It's been a phenomenal year, and especially coming off 2-5-7 seasons, and which was pretty surprising after they had won on New Year's Day back in 2012 in the Gator Bowl. And Mr. Cat, Dave Ennett, will be with us at the bottom of the hour here as we take a look at where the Cats are going. And it looks like most likely that's going to be the Outback Bowl. But there's the New Year's Six Bowl picture, right? And you've got your top four that are playing for a national championship. And most likely, if I had to bet, that's going to be Clemson and Alabama and Oklahoma, and it's either going to be Michigan State or Iowa. I'm going to bet that State beats Iowa in the Big Ten championship game next weekend, but I'd love to see my Iowa Hawkeyes get her done because that's where I went to school, and I love them. But regardless of that, like, Northwestern's fighting to be in that top 12, and it just it would take an awful lot for them to get there. My thing is this. Fitz is talking about how the Cats beat Stanford, right? Which they did on the opening week of the season. They beat them 16-6 at Ryan Field, and the only thing that you hear nationally about that game is, well, Stanford was playing an 11 a.m. kickoff, and they're a West Coast road trip, and a West Coast team, and so that's like 9 o'clock for them, and it was early in the season, and if you look at Stanford's resume, I mean, they got a lot of impressive wins. And you're not just beating teams, but beating them pretty badly, whereas you watch Northwestern play, and I love the Cats, but they don't look like a powerhouse out there, right? I mean, they're beating Illinois by 10, and Fitz talked about, well, we didn't win by 50. Winning is winning is winning. But I think what Fitz actually wants, he doesn't necessarily want his team under this huge microscope. He really just wants them to look at who they beat and not, like, really dissecting the Cats, because defensively, they're great, right, Jared? But offensively, you got a offensive line that's been challenged and has been unhealthy and in and out, and you've got a redshirt freshman quarterback who may be great down the line, but isn't great right now. I don't have a huge problem. I guess my point is that if they don't get into that top 12, I think going to the Outback Bowl and playing on New Year's Day against LSU or whoever, that'll be a huge challenge and a great, 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 great accomplishment for this Northwestern team.
Well, you start to look at their resume, right? And you look at that win out of the gate against Stanford, which was a great win. But you start going down, except for that Eastern Illinois game where they won 41-0. They were really, really close games. But the teams that have been in the picture, Carm, for the last couple of weeks now, Michigan and Iowa, they got handed in those two games. And yep. We're talking about an Iowa team that's in the top four right now and has a possibility of playing for a national championship and getting in that playoff. And to me, that's I look at all these other games, but if I look at the games where they really matter against teams that are playing well right now, they got handed in those games.
They did. There's no way around it. And, you know, in the Michigan game, they were out of it in the first quarter, opening kickoff for a touchdown, and then the Wolverines put 21 up early, and it was over. And then Iowa, that score was a little bit more competitive, but you still ended up losing by 30 at home. So I think it hurts them. And both, you know, Iowa's obviously in there, and Michigan, there's one open spot in that top 12. Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, Michigan State, Iowa, that's going to be your top five, most like 99% likely. Then you got Stanford, Notre Dame, Ohio State, and then you're going to have a Big 12 team, Baylor, Oklahoma State, TCU, an SEC team, probably either Ole Miss or Florida, and then you've got the 12th spot. And Northwestern has to beat out Florida State, North Carolina, Michigan, who they lost to, and who travels better. So it's highly, highly unlikely. And I don't necessarily think they deserve it. But like for Northwestern to be in the top 15, 20 in the country and playing on New Year's Day, I'm good with that if I'm a Wildcat fan. All day long. I'm good with that happening once every 5 years. You know, it doesn't that to me is a huge success.
Well, if you want to build your program, you need games like that. You need to be playing on those dates because that's where it really helps out with recruiting and trying to figure out how to really build this program to keep getting these 10-win seasons, because this is where you start to really build something as a program. And it's very tough when I start looking at just the top 10 and even the top 12 of where everybody sits. It's the Cats are good and all, but I just don't know where they stack up against some of those teams. And then I also have to tell you this, your Iowa team, man.
Yeah.
I know right now they're looking real good and undefeated and you're excited and you're happy, but watching them.
Yeah. No,
I don't know. I just don't know if they can hang with anybody in that top four.
You don't like a Jordan Canzari running the football? You don't like a CJ Beathard behind center?
Hold up, I do like that. But the thing is if that's all you have, and you're going up against a team like Alabama, who is great with the run, and I've seen them stop Leonard Fournette and Nick Chubb at the beginning of the year. I mean, they take away the run, so you have to be able to throw the football. And to your tight end is not going to cut it against some of these teams that are in that top four.
Well, here, we'll do a little bit more on college football coming up. Dave Bennett will be with us after the 3:30 news, and we can delve into that top of the college football world a little bit more there. It sounds like you think Michigan State has the best chance out of the Big Ten if you're a rooting for the conference type of guy. Is that fair to say, JP? Well, actually, we can dissect that a little bit more coming forward. All right, Dave Bennett, after the 3:30 news, this is The Beat at 720 WGN.
Back to throw is Lund here. Dumps it short, middle, caught by Ferguson, tries to spin out of a tackle, can't do it. That's going to be the final play of the game, and the Northwestern Wildcats have picked up win number 10, and they reclaim the Land of Lincoln Trophy. Final play of the game, and the Wildcats win it 24-14 to improve their record to 10-2 and win 10 games for just the fourth time in school history.
The great Dave Bennett on the call. You heard it here yesterday on 720 WGN. Cats 24, the Illini 14. Beat continuing. I am Mark Harmon. He is Jared Payton. We'll have Dave Bennett with us in a matter of moments, JP. He's talking to Pat Fitzgerald or something over there, or maybe Chris Collins. I'm not exactly sure, but either way, he's going to be with us in a matter of moments. Hey, Mark Richt out at Georgia, JP. This guy's been there for 15 seasons. Georgia's buying him out for $4 million. 145-51, the record. He won an SEC championship at 02 and 05, but they haven't been to the SEC title game in a little while. Fired. How does that happen? Seriously.
It happens. It happens because it's the SEC, and we're talking about big money programs, and a lot of these programs they start to look at this championship now, and if you're not in it, you feel like you're losing out, and I understand that. That's not shocking to me about Richt at Georgia, but when you start looking at other schools and you look at Les Miles at LSU, that to me, that's a joke. And the people at LSU are a joke to think that they can find somebody better than Les Miles. But we're seeing these coaches get bought out now. And if that was the case, I would take the money and run. And I know my phone's going to probably ring in a couple minutes.
I hope it does. I would congratulate you sincerely and tell you it was great working with you. And I think Dave Bennett would do the same. And he joins us now on 720 WGN. Mr. Cat with us, the voice of the Northwestern Wildcats. Dave, thanks for taking time on a Sunday. Fitz was very vocal after the game yesterday, asking, telling, wishing, believing in the college football playoff committee that they will do Northwestern right. Why don't we start there? What do you think is right for this Northwestern team with the 10-2 record?
Well, I mean, I think that they ought to be considered among the other teams that have double-digit wins, and I believe there's in the rankings out today, there's 16 of them that have that kind of a record, and I think you have to consider the strength of the Big Ten Conference when you look at that. So I think you have to factor that in. The Big Ten has been a whipping boy for the rest of college football in recent years, and yeah, I think it's turned around the last 2 years with Ohio State winning the national championship last year, and I think this year the strength of Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa, and Northwestern, and Michigan. I would put them in there, too. But I think Northwestern's record, I think, speaks for itself. I think the strength of their schedule speaks to it as well. And I think that they ought to be considered. Whether that gets them into the New Year's Six, I don't know. I mean, who knows what the committee is going to do. And I think we got a clue about it, guys, a couple of weeks ago when Jeff Long, who's the chairman of the Football Playoff Selection Committee came out and defended their placement of Stanford, perhaps a little higher than some people thought they deserved, and excused away their loss to Northwestern by citing the early kickoff, by citing an 11 a.m. Central kickoff and pointing out that it was 9 o'clock their time. I mean, since when do we make excuses for teams losing games by pointing out the time that the game kicked off? I mean, that's what this game is. Everybody plays at odd hours to accommodate television. So that was a really solid win. I think Fitz has kind of bitten his tongue the last few weeks about that. But, you know, he came out yesterday after the game and was pretty vocal about it, saying, look, that was not a fluke. They dominated Stanford in that game. I think everybody knows now how good Stanford really is.
All right, Dave Ennett, listen, I'm going to tell you, but listen, Fitz doesn't have to talk anymore because he doesn't have to bite his lip because I'm going to come out and say it. That's ridiculous.
Isn't
because
it?
You talk about, no, hold up, Dave, we're talking about the beginning of the season. I've been playing football for a long time now. If you can't get up to play the first game of the season, no matter what time zone you're in, that is a mistake because you get juiced up to play your first game. They beat them. Whatever happens, happens. And Stanford went on and played well the rest of the season, but for Northwestern, 10 wins. What does this do for the program look moving forward? Because if you can get double-digit wins, you start to build on something with your organization and your school. It kind of opens up more for having more recruits come in and opens more eyes.
Well, I think it does, JP. And I think we sort of saw this after 2012 when they won the Gator Bowl. That was their 10th win in 2012. That was a really good year, a very good football team. They started the 2014 season, or the 2013 season, rather, ranked, and I think there were very high expectations for that team. And they got out to a 4-0 start, and then they lost that heartbreaker to Ohio State, that night game at Evanston. Game day was here. It was really a big deal, and I think there were a lot of people jumping on their bandwagon, and they ended up due in part, I think, to injury, going on a prolonged losing streak and had some really bad luck where they lost a bunch of games in overtime and on a Hail Mary at Nebraska. And I think that kind of put them back on their heels and had a lot of people questioning where the program was going, even though they went 5-7. And then they had the whole union thing, and they went 5-7 again. But I think during that time, you know, we saw inklings of what they could do. They beat Wisconsin. They beat Notre Dame in 2014. And so I think they came in this year with kind of a different mindset. And the results have I think, spoken for themselves. I mean, it's been a tremendous year. And I think you look back at winning 10 games, Jared and Mark, it's something that hasn't happened very often, just 4 times in the history of Northwestern. And the last time they had done it, winning 10 games in the regular season, you have to go back to the 1995 team, which won 10 games and then lost to USC in the Rose Bowl. But, I mean, that's 20 years ago. So this team has done some things. They're kind of in one sense uncharted territory, and they've done it, I think, rather quietly. I mean, they haven't created the uproar they created in 95 when they won the Big Ten, but this has been a very solid team with some great wins, and they've won close ones, which I think is the hallmark of a good team, and I think it will help them a lot going forward. I think it will help them in terms of recruiting, in terms of exposure, in terms of all the things that you want a major football program to have.
You hit on something, Dave, early there that I want to follow up on. And, you know, the Cats go 5-7 in back-to-back years, and there wasn't even a drop of a conversation of Pat Fitzgerald not being their head coach. And, you know, Fitz has had great seasons, and he's had not-so-great seasons. But for the most part, he's been phenomenal. And really, he should have a lifetime contract at Northwestern, in my mind. You see what's going on in college football, Dave, is my point. You got Mark Richt, who's been super successful at Georgia, loses his job. Les Miles, they're talking about a $15 million buyout. These people think that the grass is greener on the other side. And there was a ton of talk in Iowa where they wanted Kirk Ferentz out, and look where the Hawkeyes are. Mark D'Antonio didn't start great at Michigan State, and look at where the Spartans are. when college football becomes like the NFL and you're talking about these huge buyouts, it just doesn't feel right to me. And I'm here as asking you, Dave, as the voice of reason. When you don't you want schools to just realize what they are and pick a coach that fits that mold? And listen, you'll have great seasons and you'll have down seasons, but you ride it out rather than making it like professional sports. Does that make sense?
You know, I agree 100%. I think you're exactly spot on. I think the Les Miles thing has been ridiculous. And on top of the fact he's got the number one recruiting class apparently coming in, whether or not you put much stock in those recruiting rankings, I don't quite understand why you would take a guy who's been so successful and then let him twist around for a couple of weeks while you decide his future, because you got a couple of boosters who somehow think they ought to be Alabama and they're not performing at a high enough level. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And I like what Northwestern has always done. I mean, they're not a school that fires coaches at random and makes coaching changes. I think you look at how long they really, I think, wrestled with the basketball situation. And Bill Carmody was there 13 years, and I thought he did a tremendous job, and I think obviously the school thought so too, because not too many coaches get 13 years anymore. And you know, Pat, I know, has a contract which extends for several more years. He seems to me, and he's always seemed to me, like the perfect fit for Northwestern, which isn't like other jobs. And you have to have, I think, a feel for what the university is and the limitations that you're going to face when it comes to the kind of players and the kind of student-athletes you're going to be able to get in there. And I think that Pat, I mean, you could see the emotion and that the players, the affection the players have for him and that he has for the players after the game yesterday. It's really, I think, not that uncommon. I mean, I would like to think there are a lot of coaches who have that kind of relationship with their players, but I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I think it's tough in this day and age, and I think that he's done a tremendous job. And there were a lot of people, you're right, Mark, there were a lot of people the last couple of years saying, well, what happened to all that momentum Northwestern had? You know, what's happened to the program? Has Fitz lost the kids there and all this, and now look where they are. So I think that sometimes things work out for a reason. I think it's been a lot of hard work there, and you know, Pat gives all the credit to his seniors, but I think that he deserves, and he's starting to get, I think, if you hear what some of the national commentators are saying, they say this has been, you know, just a tremendous coaching job, and I think that he's being appreciated for that, and I think that's well overdue.
Well, Dave, you talked about just Coach Fitz giving the praise to those seniors, but I have to go back and talk about it. Kind of a youngster, Clayton Thorson, just seeing what he can do. 6'4", 220. I knew that he could always run the football. I didn't know he was that fast, but also seeing him progress as a passer as well. Talk about just his progression over this year so far.
Well, I think we did see it, Jared. I think we saw certainly his ability to be a playmaker. Did he make some mistakes? Of course, and they knew that was going to happen with a redshirt freshman. But look at his one-loss record. I mean, they started a kid at quarterback who won 10 games. Now, he didn't do it all by himself, and he had a great running back next to him in the backfield in Justin Jackson and a couple other guys who were pretty good as well. But behind an offensive line that I believe started 8 different combinations due to mainly to injury over the course of the season, he was able to find a way to lead them to 10 wins, and whether you call it managing the game or whatever, the fact is he made enough plays to win games. And I go back to a couple of moments over the course of the season, Nebraska, the fourth quarter, where they needed to come from behind and win, and they did, and he made some big plays in that game. And at the end of the Purdue game, he took them on a drive in the fourth quarter. So I think he grew a lot over the course of the season. There's no question he can make plays with his legs. I think the thing I noticed the last few games, when it wasn't there, he wasn't trying to force it. He threw the ball away and made some smart decisions with the football. I know he had the pick six yesterday, and I know he lost a fumble when he was already under a lot of duress. But I think for the most part, he cut down on those mistakes. And I think Northwestern fans ought to be thrilled that this guy is going to be around, because he's only, you mentioned his measurables, but the guy's only going to get better. And the players, the other players on the offense love the guy. You know, they're really impressed. The coaches love his coachability and his smarts, and they really feel like he's one of the smartest quarterbacks. The offensive coaches talk about that, how he's really kind of a sponge when it comes to absorbing knowledge, and so I think it's great that he'll be around for three more years.
Dave Bennett, the voice of the Cats, we're up against the clock here, Dave, but just before, real fast, I'm just curious your opinion on what Illinois did with Bill Cupid, the two-year extension.
Well, I just think they're in a tough spot because clearly you, in this day and age, and Mark, you mentioned all the turnover to all the coaches' jobs open, clearly nobody signs a deal for 2 years anymore. But, I mean, this isn't the days of Walter Alston going year to year with the Dodgers. I mean, things have changed. But at the same time, when you have pretty much the entire administration seems to be on interim standing, at least you've got some sort of definition for the next couple of years. But it's tough. I mean, that's going to be used certainly against Illinois, that when they're recruiting. And certainly it's going to be a question that Bill Cuban and his staff will be asked, well, what? How do I know you're going to be here beyond the 2017 season? But, you know, at least for now, they know they've got a coach who's in place for the next 2 years, and recruiting's going on right now. So from that standpoint, you can't wait and go through a prolonged coaching search to put another guy in place and at the same time lose out on a lot of guys who might be willing to commit to you. So that's kind of the way I look at it. I think it was the athletic director, the interim AD, Paul Kowalczyk, who's a very knowledgeable guy and has hired a lot of really good coaches in his career at SIU and Colorado State. And he's kind of said, look, it's not ideal, but this is kind of where we are right now.
Dave, great stuff. We're going to get into the little Cupid coming up after the break. And the fact that you just referenced Walter Alston, who had 23 one-year contracts with the Los Angeles Dodgers, how good are you? What's his nickname? Are you that on top of Walter Alston's history?
Walter Alston's nickname?
Yes. Well, this is according to Wikipedia, so it could be wrong, but I'm going to believe this to be true.
Okay.
Well, his nickname was Smokey.
I see. I don't remember, so you got me there.
See, all right. Well, that's like the first time ever. Dave, thanks for jumping on a Sunday. We appreciate it.
Boys, it's an honor to be on with you.
Oh, my God. That's just too much. Thanks, Dave.
See you guys.
Dave Bennett, our sports director and the voice of the Northwestern Wildcats. I want to get JP's thoughts, you, Jared Payton, on Illinois and Bill Cupid coming back before the 4 o'clock news, 720 WGN.
I just want you to know something. I love coaching football. It is just tremendously fun to be with a young man who's motivated and goal-oriented and wants to fight for victory. I'm a Miles, and there they are right there, okay? And what I do as a part of that is I got a clear focus, and I do not, I'm not distracted easily.
That is Les Miles, the very entertaining Les Miles, still the head football coach at LSU. Is there anything more nauseating in life than the college football booster sitting there with gazillions of dollars trying to influence who coaches the football team because they have money? And God bless you for having money. Full praise. Go out and make that money. I got you. I see you. Congratulations. But the fact that you would try to influence who's the head coach of the university because it makes you feel more complete as a human being is pathetic. And I'm glad that LSU and Les Miles were able to fight them off. JP, I know you're passionate about Les, and you should be, because this is a guy who has won a ton, and his players love him, and the fans love him. It's ridiculous that a guy like that is under scrutiny because some people with money feel like they should be better than Alabama.
So we're talking about Carm.
Yeah.
I understand, especially in this day and age where winning is everything, especially in college football. I totally get it. And we're talking about two coaches in the last couple of segments now that are playing in the SEC, which people look at as being the most dominant conference in college football. And I get that as well. But you have to start looking at what a person has done over their time. And I know it's what have you done for me lately? And he won that national championship back in 2007. I think the SEC championship that year and also 2011. It's a tough deal playing in that conference. But when you have a guy of that stature as your head coach, as a leader who has great, when you talk about recruiting, not only in Louisiana, he also is great in the state of Texas. LSU was really trying to get down to the state of Florida to be able to recruit, but that's where they get the hub of most of their players. And you look at his winning percentage, it's unbelievable. And for these boosters who do have all this money, and I'm with you, Mark, if you have it, make it, keep making it. It's all good. But to start feeling like you have to make decisions on who the head football coach is going to be because of a little bit of slip up here and there. I mean, there's some programs that would love to just have three losses on a season. And to see what he's done, you're not going to find a better coach out there that's out there right now than Les Miles. The only better coach better than him, I believe, right now in college football is at Alabama. So, and he's not going anywhere. It's ridiculous that that was even a thought to try to get him out of there for what he's done so far, and not just as a football coach, but as a guy who mentors these young men. Because some guys that I played with that have played for Les Miles say that he is by far the best coach that they've ever had in their entire life.
And listen, it's whatever. I get it. Nick Saban's a phenomenal football coach. What you're talking about here. I'll roll all day with a Pat Fitzgerald or someone of that ilk, Mark D'Antonio, whoever you want to pick, who I don't have to feel like when I watch their team play that I need a shower, because it's not a college football team, it's an NFL team, and it just there's a stench around their program that just that you feel when you watch Alabama or say Ohio State play football. That's how I personally feel, and it's not really jealousy. I don't. As long as you win some, you don't have to be on top all the time. That's just how I look at it. We're up against the news, JP, so we can do a little bit more of this in the 4 o'clock hour, but we will switch gears to start and do NFL. Adam Rank from the NFL Network, who's very entertaining, will join us to start, and we'll get into the professional side of the pigskin coming up. It's the Beat 720 WGN. 720 WGN. 4 o'clock hour underway. I'm Mark Carmen. He is Jared Payton at Payton Son on Twitter. Honestly, if you want to make your life better, you follow at Payton Son. You wake up early. You get his rise and grind tweets. JP, by the way, I saw your coffee in the supermarket the other day. It looks sweet on the shelves.
Did you buy some?
Yeah, I mean, you got a heavy price tag on that coffee. I was looking for the deals. No, of course I bought some. What are you kidding me? I bought three boxes. All I do is rise and grind with you.
Hey, let me tell you one thing though, real quick, so people know this that they follow me. It's Payton Son, S-U-N, not S-O-N.
Did I say S-O-N?
You said S-O-N earlier. That's my son, but he's 3.5, and he just hit over 1,000 followers on Twitter.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
He's going to pass me in
about
3 weeks. All right, let's bring in our guy, Adam Rank, from the NFL Network, who loves Brock Osweiler. Adam, I want to read something that you wrote this past week. This is you writing. You said, honestly, this is a very delicate situation for the Broncos. You have one of the best regular season quarterbacks of all time, which is a haze at Peyton Manning, which I found to be unfair, but you did it. And then you say, a guy who has intimated that he would like to play next season much in the same way that I have intimated that I would like to be the next James Bond, which is a great desire by you. I mean, James Bond, if you could be somebody other than yourself, is a great call. But Peyton Manning's playing next season, Sir Adam Rank. He might not play for the Broncos, but somebody's going to let Peyton Manning play football if he wants to play, don't you think?
Who would want him? I mean, what quarterback situation can you look at right now in the NFL and say, yeah, that would be a team that would take him? Maybe San Francisco?
Houston Texans?
Going from, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like, Brian Hoyer was fine today. He threw a couple of touchdown passes. Can seem to find a way to get the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, anybody who looks at tape, I mean, it's unfortunate to watch him play. And I didn't mean that note about Peyton Manning being one of the best regular season. I didn't mean any disrespect by that. I'm just simply stating the case. Like, when it comes to the regular season. There's probably nobody who's better, but if you look over the scope of how he performs in playoff games, which is fair when you're talking about the greatest of all time, I think, you know, it's a fine thing, but I can't imagine any team is going to look at that and be like, yeah, Peyton would make our team better. Because it's going to be another series where he's going to be battling injuries. You can never trust him to be healthy again. And I can't see it. I just can't see any team wanting to dismantle what they got going on, no matter what their quarterback situation is. I just can't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm with you, though, Adam. You start to think about it. The one thing that you just can't beat is Father Time. And as you start getting older, those injuries start creeping in, and you can start to see the decline in his play. But for the Broncos, moving forward, I mean, with that defense that they do have, and I think you look at teams that win Super Bowls over the last few years, and it has been really about the defensive side of the football, they're good enough to win a championship offensively. The best move was to have Brock Osweiler I feel like he can make the throws that they need within that offense and be a guy that hopefully can take care of and manage the football and let the defense do what they do.
Yeah, he's really done a great job, and I hate to use the term game manager, so I won't. I'm not going to use it. He was a fine quarterback against the Bears last week. The one play that he did make to Demaryius Thomas, I mean, that was more about DT making a move and taking it upfield. The ball he threw to Cody Latimer for the winner, that was a decent throw. And so I do think that not only does he give them a better chance to win offensively because he can make throws that Peyton can't make as a quarterback right now, I think also defensively that if you know that your quarterback's out there not going to turn the ball over six times a game, you probably feel a little bit better about yourself when you're going through your week of preparation. And I felt that Gary Kubiak moved very quickly after that game against Chicago to say, look, wait, he's our quarterback. He's playing next week. So the defense didn't have a letdown. So the defense didn't get morose and start thinking about, oh, great, here comes Peyton Manning to throw another couple pick sixes. They put Brock Osweiler out there, back in there, front and center. Now he's going to get a chance to prove himself tonight against the Patriots. Although, if you look at the history of first-time quarterbacks going up against Bill Belichick, it's usually not very good. And so it'll be interesting to see how he performs tonight. I'm not expecting a lot out of Brock tonight, but definitely I think the Broncos are back into the mix because they're a little better team with him.
Patriots, a 2.5-point favorite, Denver at home, 7:30, your kickoff Sunday Night Football, Denver and the Patriots, who, of course, as I just said, 10-0, and you've got your 11-0 Carolina Panthers. Adam, do you see any way that we get to Super Bowl Sunday and we've got 16-0 versus 16-0?
That would be the greatest.
Wouldn't it?
It would be so awesome, and the team that I really trust the most to do it, it's Carolina. They're the ones I would feel the best of. If you had to pick one team, like, who do you think can run the table? I would look at Carolina just because New England's been facing so many injuries on the offensive side of the football. And it's one of those things where the Patriots always seem to find the next man up. And I think they'll find a way tonight to get it done. And whether it's James White or Keyshawn Martin or somebody that you're really not expecting to go out and have a good game, they will find a way to make that happen. But man, at some point, you look at that, and you're like, I want to believe in the Patriots. I don't want to take anything away from them. I don't want to take away from what Tom Brady's been able to do over the course of his career without a true number one, except for Randy Moss for a couple of seasons, but without a true number one wide receiver for the majority of his career. But at the same time, like, you cannot continue to miss most of these guys and still expect to go undefeated. I still think that they're the team, the odds-on favorite to go to the Super Bowl from the AFC. But undefeated, it's a little bit tougher to see. But gosh, because they would be what, 18-0 at that point.
Yep.
Like, I think the world demands it. And I don't know if this was the WWE or something. I think this is what we would be booking. But that would be fantastic. That would be, because, like, I know everybody loves around the league office loves to talk about the parity. But really, we like really good teams. We like seeing two great teams squaring off in the Super Bowl, and that would be one of the better matchups, I think, in recent memory.
Well, Adam, you look at just another team in the NFC North that I've been kind of thinking about is the Lions winning three straight games. They beat the Eagles, but the Eagles, how do you wrap your head around what's going on with Chip Kelly out there in Philly?
Yeah, it's one of those things where college coaches come in and want to demand so much authority, and I just don't think that they have a good grasp of what it takes to win at the NFL level, at least not at first. I know Jimmy Johnson kind of showed people how it was done a little bit, or kind of put a bad precedent out there, because he had so much autonomy when he took over the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know if Jerry Jones is going to claim that he had a huge hand in it, but let's be realistic. Let's get down to the brass tacks. It was all about Jimmy Johnson and molding that roster. And a lot of these college coaches think, you know, because they come from these programs where they have total control, where they have the final say on everything, and think they can just go out and do it. And it's really just not realistic. And even Pete Carroll and the situation in Seattle, he's worked with a general manager to build that roster. It hasn't been him by himself. And unfortunately for Chip Kelly, there's been nobody there to really check him, to really, you know, give him at least a sounding board. So when he has these bad ideas about bringing in quarterbacks like Sam Bradford, that somebody can be like, no, dude, that's not what you want to do. Let's go in a little bit of a different direction. And it's a harsh reality, and it'll be interesting to see if the Eagles will continue to feed him, to allow him one more year to go and try to do it his own way, if they'll bring in a general manager, or if they'll just get rid of him altogether and he ends up coaching the University of Texas next year.
Adam Rank from the NFL Network with us here on WGN. This is The Beat with you till 6 o'clock. I saw, Adam, because I read everything that you write, or at least most of it, that you thought that Green Bay was going to win on Thursday night, and you thought Devontae Adams was a good fantasy play, and he was awesome. I don't mean to bring up things that you got wrong.
Listen,
but
that's called sandbagging. I can't. I don't want to go out there and, you know, I didn't want to give the Bears too much, you know. I wanted them to have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. So I got to give them something to go after. To so say, not, look, you know, you got to, not everybody believes in you. So, although secretly, as I was sitting in my house watching that Thursday night game, of course I was rooting for, I was confident that the Bears were going to end up winning that one. Come on. I got to do some things for show, but deep down, if you read between the lines, I was predicting a Bears win.
You know, I should have done that, and I should have realized that you actually deserve credit for the victory. That's my bad, Adam Rank. I will never, ever do that again. It's been a good day for the Bears in the NFC. The Colts beat the Bucks, so they're 5-6. That's what you wanted to see happen, and you wanted the Vikings to beat the Falcons and continue their slide. That happened as well. Atlanta's 6-5. The Bears have winnable games sitting right in front of them. You want to go out on a limb right now, Adam Rank, and say that I actually see the Bears in the playoffs winning out? Because you can do that if you'd like.
I really do, because I think one of the things that I wrote, if it wasn't this week, it was 2 weeks ago, where I thought a 9-7 record was completely doable. I think that I don't want to give them an out to not go 10-6. Don't lose one on my account. But I think 9-7 is a realistic expectation. You know, I did say that before the Packers game, because I was like, the one in Lambeau is going to be tough. But you know what? I still think a 9-7 mark is very feasible. Nobody's coming out of the NFC East. The Falcons are not a very good football team. Matt Ryan somehow is how Matt Ryan has Julio Jones and seems to get worse every game, I'll never understand. And I never understand. I never understand why he gets a pass. I don't. Whatever, for whatever the reason, Matt Ryan, or he can do anything, and people are like, yeah, you're a great quarterback. And then Jay Cutler, poor Jay, does anything, like makes one small mistake, and all of a sudden he's the worst quarterback in the history of the NFL. So I'm happy to see the Falcons lose, just because of that alone. And I do think, I'm going to say the Bears are going to finish 9-7, at least. And if that's good enough to get into the playoffs, I think it could be. So I don't want to put. I'm just going to say, is it a long enough limb to say 9 wins? Is that good, or do I have to go the whole way and say playoffs?
No, listen, you can stay right where you want. Jared is preaching caution, and I'm not saying they're going to the playoffs, but I am saying if they do get in, I think they're in the game. I'm not saying they're going to win it either, but I think they're good enough to be right there with whoever they would play. Hey, Adam, we're up against the clock, so we look forward to talking to you down the line. Real fast, who's your MVP if you had to vote right now?
Cam Newton, far and away. He's done a lot without a lot of help around him, although Tom Brady's doing the same thing right now. But Cam has been amazing, just as a runner, as a thrower, and as a leader. And I think that the team's responding to him, to his celebrations and everything, which I think is a good thing.
Yep, I like it. All right, Adam, appreciate you as always.
All right, thanks so much. Appreciate you having me on.
Adam Rank, the NFL Network, at Adam Rank on Twitter. Make your life better. JP, let's continue the Bears conversation coming back here. And what's realistic for this team? I know that you have many thoughts on Jay Cutler and company and what can happen going forward here. So let's do that coming back. It's 720 WGN.
I know you guys like to say every game counts the same, but it's got to be extra.
This one is worth a lot more.
We just beat the Packers at their homecoming. Feels really good.
How awesome is that? It's Kyle Long, who was yelling at his Twitter followers right after the game as well. He's been taunting people all season long. Who picked us to win today? No one, right. See you later. Walking by the media, going into the locker room after games. You gotta love a Kyle Long, Jared Payton. By the way, he's Jared Payton. I'm Mark Harmon. It's the Beat 720 WGN. I like that fire out of the new right tackle of your Chicago Bear.
Yeah, who'd have ever thought? I mean, when he came into the organization to where he is now, I mean, it's the leadership role that he's kind of taken on with this team, and to be an offensive lineman, I think you always have to have one of those guys on that offensive line that could be a voice, but he has become an unbelievable presence for this Bears offense and for this team. And if you don't follow him on Twitter, then you're doing yourself a disservice, because he is awesome on Twitter.
There's no doubt about it. At Kyle Long. We have a special treat for you coming up on The Beat. After the 4:30 news, we're going to be talking with Ed Obradovich, royalty. No Hamp and OB with Kaz today because, of course, the Bears are not playing. But we will bring you OB right after the 4:30 news. JP, who on the defensive side of the ball, if you had to name a defensive MVP, who are you going with? Because I've been kind of wrestling around, because they've been more effective, right, than you would think they would be, but then nobody really leaps out at you. I feel like that's a tough question to answer.
It's hard, because before you started to see the injuries creep in, it was Pernell McPhee, just the way that he was able to dominate. You look at Pro Football Focus and just his numbers and what he is, what he means to this Bears defense. I would have to say him, but a guy I don't know about as being MVP of this team, but a guy who's jumped out to me, though, Carm, has been Tracy Porter.
Yep.
And watching him play, I think over the last couple of weeks, you started to see him really start to really feel comfortable in this Bears defense. And he was talking about how he was getting real close to getting an interception, and this team was figuring their way out, and he's been studying so much more. You can tell in his preparation before the game that he is feeling more comfortable going up, especially in man coverage, and making plays. He is been fun to watch to me.
Yeah, and I'm curious, because you know the technique so well, and I don't want to get super nerdy here, but when you're watching their defensive backs who making plays, and Tracy Porter is one of them that's been making a ton of them, who do you think is the most technically sound guy between him and Kyle Fuller? You could throw Bryce Callahan in there. I'm just curious, when you're watching, I don't know if you watch it that closely, I'm assuming you do because you're Jared Payton, who's like wow, that's exactly how you should play football?
Right now, I think it's Tracy. The way, if you watch the way that he is coming up, especially in man coverage, he's got this where you watch him and he's understanding. You could tell that he's watching so much more film. Kyle, there's something about Kyle. I don't know. I'm like on the fence about, you know, watching him play. I see progression here and there, and then I see him regress just a little bit. But even from the beginning of the year, it wasn't as bad as coming in from the preseason and watching him kind of get, you know, turned around like a spin cycle. But now he's starting to come into his own as well. There is a guy, though, the safety position. Adrian Amos is something. He's got this thing where you like him, that he comes down and that he has the ability to come down and hit, especially. And the Bears don't use strong or free safety. It's just kind of like they switch here and there, so there's no true label. But you like that he can come down and play the run, and he's not afraid to hit. And one of the biggest knocks on him coming out of college was that he couldn't hit. By watching him come up and stick his nose in there, even if it's in the run or after somebody catches coming across the middle, he's not afraid to come and hit you, and I like that, and I think he's only going to grow as he gets more and more time on that football field.
Fifth-round pick, you got to tip your hat to Ryan Pace on that one. Great selection in the fourth rounder, Jeremy Langford looking awful good too. We're going to talk with Ed Obradovich right after the 4:30 news. Weather in the first 5 minutes. Watch Chicago's first weather report at 10 p.m. with Tom Skilling. That's weeknights on WGN-TV. The news at 10. Bears with OB after the 4:30 news on 720 WGN.
The group Chicago is up, and they've been up many, many times, and they are not in the Hall of Fame of rock and roll, which to me is a disgrace. So they're up now this year. So let's hope here in the next month or two that they get voted in because they're just a great, sensational band.
Out of nowhere, you're going Chicago band as your last thought of the day?
That's my last thought of the day. Don't say anything more. I'll pop you right in your nose.
I love it.
So let me.
And I couldn't agree more.
Can't get a 25-6-2-4 out of you right now, right here.
No, I'm going to give you a 92-91 WAPO right across the schnozzo in about a minute-o.
I honestly, on this Thanksgiving weekend, things that I am thankful for in my life, one, is to get to work with the great Ed Obradovich Sunday afternoons on WGN. JP, he's spot on, right? Chicago's got to be in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, they have to be. It's a must, right?
I mean, is there a better man to bring into the show on a Sunday when I don't get to see him face-to-face? But I'm OB, I missed you so much that I wanted to call and see how you were doing on a Sunday. I hope that's okay.
Everything's fine. Right back at you, kiddo. But I believe... the group Chicago, I believe they're like number one in the voting. I think they got about 37 or 38 million votes. And hopefully this time they'll get in.
Do you remember the first concert you ever went to, OB?
I don't go to concerts, Mark.
Even back in the day?
No, I never did. Actually, I did. I went to one. And it was out at Sox Park, and it was Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
And I went with my son-in-law, Lewis, and my daughter, Gigi, and the three of us went. And I had some really pretty good seats. And they were like about 45 minutes, 50 minutes late. And then when they got up there, they're tuning up their instruments and everything. And I'll tell you, before they were supposed to go on, people were going crazy out there. I mean, why they were late, who knows? And I listened to about the first hour of it. And I turned to my kids. I said, you guys had enough? They said, yeah, good. I'm out of here. That's it.
Well, that's loud music. I feel that, you know, hey, sometimes you've had enough. You want to get out of there, even out of Bruce Springsteen. JP, go ahead with OB because this is just, I feel like I get to talk to him all the time. But it's so awesome. Go ahead, my friend.
I love it. OB, how you doing, sir? I think the biggest thing is when we look at this Bears team has been people keep talking about, especially John Fox. He looked at this game against the Green Bay Packers as not being a big one or it publicly to the media, but we knew that this is a big deal. Anytime you become the head coach of the Bears, beating the Packers is always the top of mind when you come into this organization.
Well, yeah, Jared, you know, it's the rivalry's been going on. I think we're getting close to about 100 years now, something like that. And it has been, is, and forever will be a huge game. But also, there's 15 other games. Okay, you got to play them twice. But what is so unique about football is, you know, the game is a violent game. We understand that. But the thing is, you're not building for next year. You're building for today. Now is what's important. It's 16 games. That's all you're playing. And I've said, I don't know how many, you know, baseball, what is 162 games? Hockey's 85. There is no tomorrow. Everything is about today. And the thing that had to happen with the Chicago Bears, with John Fox, the new head coach coming in, he brought in some quality coaches. Gase, proven offensive coordinator. Fangio, proven defensive coordinator. They brought in some quality position coaches. And what you're seeing now, and because they had such a big turnover from last year to this year in personnel, the thing that had to happen, gentlemen, and to your listeners, is the system that they put in, the players had to buy into the system. If they don't buy into the system, we don't win a game. We don't have the best football players on the planet in the National Football League, that's for sure. But what they're doing, they bought into the system. Every game, they're going down to the wire. And the biggest change has been Cutler. Cutler has been the biggest change. His previous 6 years or seven, whatever he's been here, I think, since what, 2009?
Yep.
His attitude his demeanor on the field, off the field, his smart aleck remarks, his jerky face, him not paying attention on the sideline, that's gone. You don't see it this year. What you're seeing is hopefully the really true, legitimate Jay Cutler. He's paying attention, okay? He's alert. He's the leader of the team now. He has finally taken over. And he bought in, and therefore I think the rest of the players bought in on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. And these kids are playing their hearts out. They're going after people. They're trying to make things happen on defense, trying to get takeaways, trying to make the big third down stop. And they're doing it, again, with not the best football players in the National Football League. So, again, the number one thing, and I told you, Mark, a few weeks ago, that really smacks at me and hits me, is that these kids have bought in to John Fox and what he's trying to do. I truly believe that, because if they didn't, you'd see Helter Skelter out there, and you'd see the same thing we saw last year, people disappearing, jumping in the holes. They're not doing it. They're standing up, and they're fighting for four quarters, and that impresses the hell out of me.
How, OB, you're talking about Cutler, just the pure fundamentals. He just seems like his footwork has taken a huge leap forward. I mean, how hard is that? I mean, this is not, a rookie here, and it's not even a third-year player. You're talking about a guy in his early 30s, and they've been able to change around what he does and make him, stay within himself. How hard is that to do? Because I feel like it's pretty damn difficult.
Well, I'll take issue with that, Mark.
Okay.
It's really not. Cutler's got talent, guys. I mean, the guy can run. I mean, he can sprint out of that pocket. He can bootleg. He can throw on the run. He's got an arm like a cannon, and he's always had it. But he's had this, for lack of better terminology, I don't know, it's helter-skelter attitude about football. And it's not. When you get out there for 60 minutes and it's what it's all about, you got to be prepared. I mean, he's the leader of this team. And for him to do what he's doing, he should have done many years ago. But I believe the fact of the matter is he never bought into it. Neither did a lot of other players buy into it. And so does Cutler have the talent to do last year, the year before, the year before, the year before, to do what he's doing now? You're damn right he had. He does have the talent to do it. And thank God now it's coming out under John Fox, and it's so great to see. And, excuse me, a week from today, we've got the San Francisco 49ers coming in,
mm-hmm.
a home game. And I would love to see the Bears go out there and just really take care of business and win a game very impressively at home in front of the greatest fans on this planet, the Chicago Bear fans. And I believe it's going to happen.
OB, you look at the running back position. Matt Forte has been here for the last couple of years and just done so well, but it seems like this kid, Jeremy Langford, is going to be the future. Have you liked his progression so far as a rookie?
I liked him at Michigan State. The kid, he's a banger. I mean, he's got a quick start, Jared. You play running back. He's got a quick start. He can plant and move left or right. And he runs with power. I'm glad we've got him. Carry a capable running back also. But Matt Forte has been, Jesus, what a wonderful guy he is. What a wonderful football player. He runs like a deer. He comes out of the backfield. He's a great receiver. And he's been the Bears' number one guy all the years he's been here. Now he's got nicked up a little bit with a knee. But, hey, Pace came in, he drafted Langford in the fourth round out of Michigan State, and the kid stepped up to the plate, and he's producing. Why? Because the kid bought in. He wants to be the best, and you can't beat that, gentlemen.
Hey, OB, we got good news today. The Bucs lost to the Colts. We wanted that, so they're 5-6. Indy 25-12. The Vikings beat the Falcons. We're not going to catch Minnesota. Atlanta's in that wild card race. You wanted that loss. That was good. 20-10. These things are it's setting up where the Bears actually are going to have a shot here. Certainly if they win out, which is a big, tall task, but if they do it, this team is going to be in the playoffs. Before you go, OB, who was your least favorite Green Bay Packer that you ever played against?
I never had him.
No? Come on.
No. Are you kidding me? When you played against the Packers, I mean, guys, we used to play them three times a year. Two league games, and then we would play the Shriners game up in Milwaukee, okay? That was an exhibition game. That was like war. I mean, when you'd go out there, you know, you'd start, you'd play the first, second quarter, maybe in the third quarter, and then they put the backups in. Well, when we played that exhibition game in Milwaukee, I'm telling you, it was like death-defying, guys. I mean, Lombardi would go after Halas. Halas would go after Lombardi. Packers would go after us. We'd go after them. And when that game was over with, it was like a bloodbath out there. And it was an exhibition game. And do I hate anybody in the Packers? Or at least, like, no, I really don't. I respected them. They had a great coach. They've got great tradition up there. A lot of great players. They've got Rodgers now, who is absolutely phenomenal. And so I don't hate them. I really don't hate anybody. I respect them more than I use the word hate.
Yeah, I should have phrased it. Who did you like to beat the most? That would have been a better way to put it. Did you ever say anything to Lombardi in a moment of competition that you know, just came flying out of you?
No, not really. You know, he tried controlling the game, just like Halas tried controlling the game. And what do I mean by that? The referees. Vince Lombardi was always in the referee's ear, play after play after play. Then Halas is always in their ear, play after play after play. And to see those two guys go at each other in an exhibition game, let alone two league games, it was comical, but it was dead serious. I mean, they played to win it. It did, no matter what came.
What about your buddy Doug Buffone? Did he ever say anything? By the way, go buy Doug Buffone's book. Google it. It's available everywhere. Doug Buffone, Monster of the Midway. Did Dougie ever say anything?
Well, he might have said a couple of things, but I can't say it over the radio. So we'll just leave that one alone, Mark.
I think it's okay. I look, some good competition hate, there's nothing wrong with that. And then, you know, after you get a little older and you look back on it, you realize how much respect you have for them. There's nothing wrong with that. Right, JP?
Hey, listen, I knew from the days, OB, when my dad would get ready for that Packers week, there were certain things. He didn't have to say much, but you could tell in his eyes that it was that week that he would just be so focused and laser, just focus on the game plan, and would come home with a smile on his face. And I asked him after he retired, I said, Dad, what was it like beating the Packers? And he couldn't put it into words, but I could tell in the glare in his eye what the game and that rivalry meant to him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and Jared got lost there a few years after that great Bears team, which your father obviously was a part of, a big part of, and that kind of got lost there a little bit, the rivalry. And, you know, we went through head coach after head coach after head coach. But if I could jump back to this year.
Yeah.
I love what, just quickly here, guys, what the defense is doing, this 3-4 as opposed to a 4-3, you know, and to your listeners out there, and what it is, it's a confusing defense, it's a pressured defense, and it's a slant defense. You'll see the either two down linemen or three down linemen, whatever situation they come in with, they're always, every play they're slanting, a stronger, weak side. And one thing I'd like to see us do now is go after people. Let's start blitzing. I still think, Mark, that we're the least blitzing team in the league, if not damn close to it. I like to see more pressure come with blitzes, more unique blitzes. I like to see that happen. Offensively, I would love to see them open up more again. I want to see Cutler. I want to see those people go downfield. I want to see the post pattern, crossing ends, fly patterns. We really don't stretch the field a lot. That's one thing I like to see us do the remaining games. Stretch the field in the passing game because it is a passing league. Defensively, let's be a little more creative, a little more fire. Let's come after people, and let's hope. And it is a possibility, guys. you know, unless things go crazy here, I mean, what I see, I'm seeing some serious football played out there by some serious kids that bought into a system, and winning the rest of the games is not out of the question.
It isn't. It absolutely is not. What are we going to do with Shea McClellan, OB?
Oh, don't even go there. That's that kid.
It's a Sunday that they're not playing. You don't want to say anything bad.
No, he's a nice kid. Okay, he's a nice kid. Let's let it go at that. Okay, I think your listeners out there and the football people don't know when they're watching the game. All they got to do is keep their eyes on him, and that'll give you the answer.
Yeah. OB, you're the best. We will see you next Sunday when the Bears take on the 49ers. Looking very much forward to it. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend, and thanks for jumping on.
All right, Jared, you guys have a good day. Mark, you too. It's a great show. See you next week.
All right. There he is, OB, our guy. Love it. Is there anyone better than that guy, honestly?
Hey, just take – you can scrap the whole entire interview and just put that – part about Shea as the podcast, because that was hilarious.
I knew that I didn't know, but I had a feeling that he was not going to go there, but they went there hardcore on actually, we have a rant from that, Jackal. All right, coming back, you're going to hear an old Shea rant. You don't want to go anywhere. That's next, 720 WGN.
DeRisi, you have a three-down lineman, a 3-4. You've got to have guys that play the inside. The two inside backers have to hit those gaps. They have to be active, okay? You can't sit back there and try to read something and then react. Play's over with, and that's what McClellan does. Period.
It's almost like he's paralyzed by indecision. And folks,
I got a better word for it, Danny. How about, could it be possible this kid takes scared to death pills?
Taking those scared to death pills. That was just a little snippet.
I love that.
That is that's some strong stuff. And there's a whole lot more if you go to WGNradio.com and get in the podcast of the Hamp OB with Kaj show. There's a bunch of that stuff available. That was OB talking about Shea McClellan. I'm Mark Harmon. He is Jared Payton. This is The Beat on 720 WGN. We are with you till 6 o'clock tonight. A lot of stuff going on in the NFL, as always, on a Sunday. And we did mention the good news as far as the Bears' playoff picture is concerned. Vikings beating the Falcons 20-10. You wanted that for Atlanta and the wild card picture. The Falcons are on a significant slide. They've lost four in a row now. And the other good news was the Colts beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, also 5-6, same record as the Bears, and the Redskins beat the Giants. So Washington and New York, also 5-6. So it's there for the Bears if they can get hot. 312-981-7200. JP, let's take a phone call here. Let's get Dave in Indiana on 720 WGN. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, guys. Great show as usual. I have to agree with Eddie O, and my only question is, and the Green Bay game, didn't Shea get a hangnail in the first quarter and have to sit out the rest of the game?
See, now that's just wrong, Dave.
But it's true.
Why are you questioning Shea's toughness? Is it the way that he tippy-toes to fill a hole and doesn't hit anybody?
Well, wouldn't somebody have it back a couple of weeks ago where they called him a wussy?
That's possible. I don't quite remember that, but I wouldn't rule it out. He's a great pile jumper, Dave.
Yeah, he is a great pile jumper after the fact.
Well, I mean, that's a skill, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate you, Dave.
Appreciate you guys.
All
appreciate
right.
You guys 100%. Have a good one.
Hey, JP, how do you make Shea better? Because a lot of people are actually happy with Shea. Like, if you look at his stats, they're not bad, but when you really watch him, you see a guy that's, he still needs some work.
Hey, let me just tell you, it's funny to, I get it. When coming out of college, when he came out of Boise State, there was something about him that, especially the position that he played, of putting his hand down the ground and trying to get to the quarterback. I mean, you look at his bench press numbers, he didn't have that get off where he could push, you know, offensive linemen off him and get to the quarterback. So I knew that there was going to be some type of switch position for him. And just right now, you look at what he does. I think the reason why he's there in the middle is a big reason because he can call the plays and put guys in the right position to be successful. But I think his natural position would be to play maybe outside a little bit, but there's nobody else making the calls. And they tried it with Christian Jones. It just didn't seem like it was working that well while Shea was out.
You can bet a lot of money that the Bears will be drafting many linebackers come the 2016 NFL draft. Let's get your set for news. And when we come back, there is actually some breaking news about your Chicago Bulls as well. So as we start the 5 o'clock hour, and I do want to get into something as far as there was an athlete, a Chicago athlete, who got in a fight with a fan recently that I want to talk about with JP coming back here. 720 WGN.
Holy touchdown,
baby! Chicago Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Five o'clock hour. 720 WGN. Sorry for the fast fade there. I never know what button works. Went a little too quick. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Jared Payton with you till 6 o'clock. Brian Noonan will have this very microphone at that point. Brian, of course, here till 9 o'clock tonight. Rick Kogan with you at 9. JP, there's not good news out on Mike Dunleavy, who had back surgery at the start of the season. And if you remember, the Bulls signed him to a 3-year deal in the offseason. And the Bulls are way better when Mike Dunleavy's on the court. He just rounds out that starting five supremely well. But he is going to see a doctor tomorrow, experiencing soreness in his surgically repaired back. This is 9 weeks after offseason surgery. And Dunleavy, you know, back then he warned that this could take a while. I don't really know how long. We're 9 weeks in. It was an 8 to 10 week recovery, so it sounds like it will be a little longer. That is not the news that the Chicago Bulls were looking for.
No, not at all, especially when you start looking at just how Fred Hoiberg has been trying to still figure out that starting line and just moving pieces around. This Bulls team could really, really use him right about now, and I think that was one of the biggest things that I was looking at was when he was going to return and how he would round out this Bulls team.
And neither Doug McDermott nor Tony Snell have shown any signs that they can be primetime players in the league. Maybe serviceable backups, but to me that's still a big maybe. There's an interesting story going on with one of Chicago's very own, Jahlil Okafor, who went to Whitney Young and played 1 year at Duke and was a kid. Did you ever meet Jahlil, JP?
Yes.
I mean,
yes, I got a chance to meet him a couple years ago before he committed to Duke, and you know I've been a Duke fan all my life, so getting a chance to meet him and interview him was pretty cool.
And you would agree with me, right, that as impressive as a young guy could be, super respectful, remembers people's names, seemed like basically he had every, not just the basketball covered, but every part of his life. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and so Jahlil has been, if you're following along the NBA, there's been a bunch of incidents with Jahlil, which is, to me, it's shocking. But so back in October, apparently a heckler pointed a gun at Okafor, said this was after a verbal exchange at a Philadelphia club. Then apparently he was in Boston recently, and the Sixers have not won a basketball game, and he was being taunted by, I don't know, Sixer fans or whoever, about how they were never going to win a game, and he got into an altercation, which was completely out of character, and now he was crossing the Brooklyn Bridge and apparently was going 108 miles an hour. That's 40 miles per hour is the speed limit. I mean, he's way, way, way over. And now he had a bunch of tweets today, Jahlil Okafor, I hold myself to a higher standard than anyone else ever could, and I'm not proud of some of my decisions over the last few months. I own my choices both personally and now publicly. At this point, I'm cooperating and respecting the process I have to go through. Jahlil Okafor continuing on Twitter, going forward, I don't want to be a distraction for my team, and I'm grateful for the support and guidance those close to me are giving. And then finally, I am 100% focused on my responsibility to the league, my teammates, and fans. And, you know, I don't know what it's like to be an NBA player. I don't know what it's like to have everything in life when you're 20 years old and you've got millions of dollars and everybody's been basically worshiping you since you were 12 years old because they saw that you were going to be into the league making huge dollars. But listen, driving really fast at 20 years old, I did it. What I didn't do was ever have a gun pointed at me and heckled. And the fact that he got in a fist fight over that at 20, it's not a good choice, obviously. But that's something that I mean, I'm not going to judge him for that. That's crazy, right? I mean, it's not what you want to do. But I mean, come on, how can you even like point at him and say, "How could you do that?" You have no idea what that's like. I mean, that's crazy to me.
It is. It's crazy, but it's also a situation where, I mean, we start looking at ourselves and what we did back in the day when we were in our 20s. We kind of sit back and reflect and laugh on some things and are upset about some things that we did. But he as a player and as an athlete, you do have to understand your surroundings and where you decide to go and go hang out. I'm not telling him that he can't go out and party and have a good time, because he should. But he needs to be able to really kind of hone back and see the places that he's going, where people are pulling out guns on you. Those are places that you don't need to be at. So sometimes you have to be able to remove yourself from the situation. And we know how hard that is sometimes after having a couple of drinks here and there. But you have to be able to do it, because now the microscope is on you even more in this day and age that we live in with social media.
And you're right. But again, I mean, imagine your Jahlil Okafor is 19 years old, right? 19, a 6'11", 275-pound, well-educated, out of Whitney young kid, right? You're making millions of dollars. You're in the NBA. Yeah, hey, son, you can't go out and enjoy yourself, or you can only do it in the privacy of your own home. That's just, I mean, that sucks.
But Mark, I know it does stink, but you know what? Sometimes that's what you sign up for. You know what I mean? Like, you know what's coming with all that stuff. And it's a tough deal. And I'm not saying that, listen, we all make mistakes, but he needs to start figuring out where he is choosing to go hang out and who he's hanging out with. Because it seems like he's put these, you are who you hang with. And you got to start thinking about that too. And I had an opportunity be around my dad and see how he handled himself. And coming from Mississippi, the whole stardom thing was crazy to him. Even after he got done playing, while he was playing, but he was not perfect. But he figured out how to put himself in other situations where he wasn't around some of that stuff.
Yeah, and your dad was obviously super mature about it.
I hate to bring him up all the time.
I think you should bring him up more. I'm always ready to talk 34. I'm not kidding. You bring him up all you want, my friend. I'm glad. I love that you're proud of your pops and you bring him in here. Listen, he needs to make better choices. But as a Chicago kid who's playing on one of the worst teams in the NBA and he's battling every night, and yeah, okay, he went too fast on the bridge and he's putting his own life and others' lives in danger. Can't be doing that. But I'm not going to sit here and crucify the guy for being 19 and having all that money and having moments where he's acting 19. It's as far as things go, to me, what's going on there is nothing. So I'm supporting Jahlil, and I have full confidence that guy's going to get his P's and Q's, if you will, in order, and that he's going to be a phenomenal player in the league. That perennial all-star potential Hall of Famer. I mean, that's what I see on Jahlil. Hey, JP, I know that you're getting ready for your TV show. What's coming up on Sports Feed tonight?
Sports Feed tonight on CLTV, man, we'll just be hitting everything, talking some Bears, also getting into some Bulls, talking about the Dunleavy stuff, and should be a great show. Andy Mazur will be joining me tonight because Josh Freiman is off, so should be a good show. Starts at 6 o'clock, and it's always good talking with you, Carm. I appreciate you.
JP, you're the best. Tell Mazur that I love him like I've never loved an Andy Mazur in my life, I miss him. Can you do that for me?
I will do that.
Thank you. All right, my friend. We'll talk to you next weekend.
All right.
There goes Jared Payton. I am with you until 6 o'clock, along with the Jackal, Mike Jacobson. We have a lot coming up, including an inspirational story from the Diamond. And there is actually baseball news as well today, which does impact perhaps at least impacts your Chicago Cubs. Bears fans, join Chicago Tribune Sports Plus for a sports-only membership that includes award-winning coverage, great perks, and more at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. Inspirational Crash Davis style story coming next on 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN indeed. I'm Mark Carmen with you till 6 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200. Was just talking about Jahlil Okafor and local guy, Chicago, Whitney Young High School, and then, of course, had a year at Duke, won a national title, and now on the winless Philadelphia 76ers and driving 100 miles an hour on the Brooklyn Bridge and getting in some altercations in a bar, and I'm just reminding everybody that he's 19 years old, and 19 years olds, especially with millions of dollars, they make mistakes. Let's not crucify the guy. We'll get to the breaking baseball news in a minute here. 312-981-7200 if you want to weigh in on Jahlil. Joy in Orland Park did just that. Joy, welcome to WGN. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much. I don't know Jahlil. I don't know the whole background, but I keep hearing people say, as you just said, and other people saying, you know, he's got $1 million. He's this kid that maybe doesn't know how to handle it. He's only this age, you know, and I get all of that. At the same time, I'm wondering how some kid that, whether he's out here in Orland or whether he's in the city somewhere, who doesn't have all this problem of having all these millions of dollars at a young age, if they pulled that stunt on the bridge, they'd be in jail, and they'd be in jail for a while. Right off the bat, they might not even get out to see the light of day until their lawyer got around to him or this or that. And I'm not wishing that on this kid, but somehow when we say, oh, the poor guy's got all this, it's hard to handle. It's hard to handle not having all that. And if any other kid pulled that stunt and endangered other people's lives like that, it would not be the same story.
Well,
and
hold on a second.
You know, when we say the poor guy, you know, and I understand that, but some other kid in his situation's not going to get off like that, even temporarily.
All right, sorry I cut you off there for a second, Joy. And listen, I'm not saying the poor guy. I'm just trying to bring some reality to the conversation. And in reality, listen, Joy, if you drove down the highway right now and went 100 miles an hour and you got pulled over, they're not taking you to jail. You're going to get a very expensive speeding ticket, and that's what he deserves. I mean, you're not getting hauled off to Joliet, right?
Oh no, I understand that, and you're very right that I would probably get a very expensive speeding ticket, but somebody else might get. And I'm not all part of the protest. I'm not knowledgeable on all this. I don't even own a TV right now. I'm listening to you guys on the radio, but I'm telling you, somebody else might get 16 bullets. Okay, and it's like, I would get a very expensive speeding ticket. Some other kid in his position might get far worse than he's getting right now. And as I said, I'm understanding where you're coming from with that. It's just like when Justin Bieber was doing all this crazy ass stuff. Well, the guy's, you know, famous and this and that. And, you know, it's just hard because there's kids out there that are not going to get the same breaks.
Situation. Well, hold on. When you say get 16 bullets, are you saying that somebody, that the police might not be reasonable with him and would use him going 100 miles an hour as a reason to murder someone? Are you going there, Joy?
Oh, not wanting to go there because I love cops that are in my life that I know, and there's a lot of good guys out there. I just said I'm not part of the whole blame the cop every time, but I'm saying bad things happen a lot of times to people when they're in a situation like Jahlil was in, where they're, you know, committing an act that could be a danger to somebody, and they're not necessarily going to get the same understanding.
Right.
Or okay. He might not have gotten it had they not been aware who he was, perhaps, or something. So bad things happen all the time. Right. And it's just, I think, for young kids to feel like, you know, good, let's be understanding with him, but let's be understanding, too, that other people can say the same thing that, you know, well, you know, my dad told me stories about what he did when he was my age, and, you know, but he could have caused an accident that could have taken a life. So.
Right. Okay. Hey, Joy, I appreciate the phone call.
It sounds like he's owning it. It sounds like he's owning it.
He's owning it big time, and I appreciate the phone call. 312-981-7200. I didn't, you know, the reference there was 16 shots on Laquan McDonald. This is a sports show, and I'm not going to delve into – I'm not going to jump into that hat, but since it was referenced just for a second there. Listen, Jahlil, again, he deserves to get a speeding ticket and have to pay a significant fine. And maybe even, listen, if do some community service perhaps, I suppose. That's fine. But and listen, as a African-American guy, I do think the reality of the world that we live in is that you don't want to put yourself in a position where you're giving the police, and 99% of cops are great, but some aren't. And if I was an African-American guy, I wouldn't want to be in that position. I wouldn't. I wouldn't feel safe on some level, because it happens all the time. Now, Jahlil it's a totally different scenario. I mean, this is an NBA guy, 6'10". People are going to know who he is, and he is going to get the benefit of the doubt. But Listen, when somebody's super talented and they get the benefit of the doubt, I don't begrudge them that. Somebody, like, they're people like, well, when I went to college, I had to go to class and this and that. Or why do athletes get scholarships? Because they're more talented than you. Because they're better at a specific skill than you are. And they get preferential treatment. That's the way the world works, right or wrong. I don't see getting angry about that. 312-981-7200. Tom, and I know she's just giving him advice. Tom in the Northwest Suburbs, you're on 720 WGN. Go ahead.
Hey, Mark, how's it going tonight?
Good, Tom. How are you?
Good. All these salaries that these young athletes are being paid, mm-hmm. I mean, didn't the lawyers for the sports agents that are with these young athletes, I mean, it would make so much sense if they hired them like a personal coach and then just say, look, you're going to meet with this person, and they're going to try to keep you on the straight and narrow so certain things don't happen less, or you get, you're not out until 3 o'clock in the morning drinking, and then all of a sudden, some smart chick is trying to pick you up, and then class, you did something to her.
I got you, Tom, and your cell phone's breaking up, so I'm going to put you on hold. Listen, they do have agents, and they do have advisors, but when you're in that situation, you're making that type of money, it has to be challenging to figure out who you can trust, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you have to have somebody in your life who is going to have your best interest, whether you have tons of dough or not. And those guys, listen.
Don't you mean having somebody in your life who will say the two-letter magic word?
No.
Yeah.
That's a big word.
That's the word.
Yeah. Can I get $10,000 so I can take my kid? No. No, you cannot. I mean, certainly, absolutely, it's cool to help out your mom and your dad and some special people, but your 10th cousin twice removed who wants...
Does not get a brand new $400,000 house.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't get a Lamborghini.
But I'm not going to tell a 19-year-old kid that he doesn't get to go out and go to the bars. And I guess he's 19, so he shouldn't be at a bar, but then when I was 19, I was in bars. I just think
some 19-year-olds, maybe you should tell them, no, you don't belong in a bar because we have proof.
I mean,
you don't do well when you drink.
Right. And who even knows if he was drinking? The guy had a gun pointed at his face and he got in an altercation. I have no idea how I would react in that face, but hitting someone in the face who points a gun at you, that doesn't seem completely unreasonable to me. All right, let's get to David's news. And we've got Tom Fornelli talking college football. He's outstanding right after the 5:30 break. We'll take a look at who's going where bowl-wise. The world-famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars for 2016 are available now in the featured section on WGNradio.com. This year, Chicago is captured in black and white, presented in a special one-of-a-kind way in the 2016 2K's calendar. This is the eighth year for these highly sought-after calendars, and this is the first year it's all black and white. Not only does it feature Chicago landmarks as seen through the lens of our spectacular photographers, but the images are crafted with your name seamlessly blended in. You'll enjoy a view of Chicago that will change the way you look at the city forever. These black and white calendars at a whole new level of class and elegance. Give a gift that's completely 100% original. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll down to the featured section. Make a purchase of our calendar and a portion of the proceeds will benefit JDRF. To make 2016 an epic year, you have to start with an epic calendar, the 2K's calendar, available in the feature section at WGNradio.com. News, and then Tom Fornelli from CBS sports the guy knows is college football. 720 WGN.
You know, when I look back, I know 5-7, you know, you look back in there, but I when I look at that, I see enormous potential. You know, they asked, and I've told them many times, I love these kids. It's all about them. And when it was presented to me, the bottom line was I asked myself, why do you coach? And I coach because I love being around players like this.
And you make a lot of money. That's Bill Cupid. God bless him. Your Illinois head football coach. 2-year extension for him. My name is Mark Harmon. This is 720 WGN. It's The Beat with you till 6 o'clock. Brian Noonan taking over then. Pleased to bring in a college football expert, Tom Fornelli, CBS Sports, and actually a Chicago guy, if you look on Twitter, Proviso West High School class in 1998. He was also the 5th grade district spelling bee champ. Tom, congratulations on it. A little bit belated, but that's impressive.
Thank you very much. It's still my proudest accomplishment.
Yeah, and I feel you, because the greatest thing that I've ever done in my life was I sank a crucial free throw in an intramural game back in 1997, and that allowed us to advance into the Elite Eight at the University of Iowa, which, by the way, is a great football team. Why don't we start there, Tom, because I just flowed right into it. What do you think of the Iowa Hawkeyes versus the Michigan State Spartans in the Big Ten championship game? Do you have Michigan State, like seemingly the rest of the world, with no respect going towards the Iowa Hawkeyes?
It's not that I don't respect Iowa. It's just I think Michigan State's probably the better team. I expect Michigan State to win, but at the same time, I would not be shocked if Iowa beats Michigan State, simply because, as we've seen with the Spartans this year, yes, they've only lost the one game, and it was in, you know, the somewhat controversial fashion on the road against Nebraska, a touchdown that maybe should not have counted. But even in wins, that was the strangest thing about the Penn State win on Saturday, because they blew Penn State out, and you're just not accustomed to seeing Michigan State blow anybody out this year. They've played a lot of close games. So going to Indianapolis facing Iowa, I'm expecting another close game, and this is an offense that, if Connor Cook has a bad day, Michigan State doesn't really score. The run game, for the most part this season, had been non-existent. It's pretty much all been on Connor Cook all season long to move the ball, to put points on the board for Michigan State. And the defense, which we've seen in recent years, they've always thought was a dominant unit, has been good this year, but not quite up to Michigan State standards. Then you look at Iowa, and this is a team that's solid in all facets. There's nothing amazing about its offense. There's nothing amazing about its defense. And there's nothing amazing about its special teams unit. But there's no real weakness either. It's solid up and down its depth chart in every key spot. So this is a team that, when it plays well, is capable of beating anybody. And it's capable of beating Michigan State. And like I said, if they beat Michigan State and win the Big Ten, I will not be shocked, and they will 100% deserve the playoff spot they'll no doubt get if it happens.
I feel a little bit better after that, Tom. I appreciate it. Let's talk Bill Cupid, who you heard coming back here after the timeout, and he gets a 2-year extension from the University of Illinois. Was that the right move? I was all for giving a guy, well-respected guy, Cupid, the position, but if you're going to do it, why not make a real commitment and say 4 years where he can actually recruit with some confidence?
It's not the right move, but I don't know what other move Illinois really thought it could make right now. I mean, if you look at the situation, that the school's a mess from the top down. You know, they've got an interim chancellor who's working with an interim AD, who is working with an interim head coach, looking for a permanent head coach. And if you're another head coach at another school looking to take a step up, and you look around the country and there's, you know, like 15 jobs available, is Illinois really the one you want to take with so much uncertainty, considering that you might get hired and a week later they might hire another athletic director who did not hire you and is going to be looking for any reason to get rid of you to bring in his own coach? So it's not the most attractive job, but I don't know if you really want to go with Bill Cupid for 4 years either, because Bill Cupid essentially had a year-long, you know, trial for the job, and Illinois finished 5-7, and thanks to the fact that there's now 5 million bowl games, Illinois might still be lucky enough to go to a bowl game with a 5-7 mark. But if you look at this team down the stretch, it faded significantly. It got off to a good start early in the year, but it went 1-6 down the stretch, with its only win being against a very bad Purdue team. Other than that, it, you know, lost to Iowa, it lost to Wisconsin, it got blown out by Penn State, it got beat up pretty good by Ohio State.
lost to Minnesota, and yesterday, even though it only lost by 10 to Northwestern, you never really felt like Illinois was in that game. This hasn't been a good team for the last month and a half. And to give Cubitt the job for 2 years, I feel like you're pretty much punting on the program, because you're saying for the next 2 years, you know, how is Bill Cubitt supposed to recruit anybody? How is he supposed to go to a high school kid and say, hey, come play for me, I'll be gone your sophomore season?
Right.
And if you look at what the interim AD said, he said that it wasn't the ideal situation, but he doesn't think it's putting a stake through the heart of the program. If you have to say that, that's essentially exactly what you're doing. This is going to be a mess for a few years, because Illinois is still going to have to hire a new athletic director. And when that athletic director comes in, I don't think he's going to be wanting to have Bill Cubitt as his football coach. So I feel like what they're doing is, we have people in charge that really just don't want to make the decision. So they're just kind of kicking the can further down the road and letting somebody else make the exact same decision next year, when Illinois is going to be in the exact same position it's in now.
Well, and that's exactly what, you know, we do in this country all the time. Anyway, kick it all down the road. So, I mean, hey, Illinois, maybe it was the right thing to do, actually, thinking about it, because they aren't in position. You can't give them a one-year deal, so we'll give you two. We'll punt the next 2 years, and then you'll be out of here, and we can sort of resurrect the program, I suppose. Rutgers is looking for a head coach too. Which is a better job, Rutgers or the University of Illinois?
Oh, they're very similar situations, because when you're comparing athletic departments that are complete mess in the Big Ten, Rutgers and Illinois have been neck and neck in that competition for a while. Neither of them are very good. I would give the slight edge to Illinois, simply because even though Rutgers is in New Jersey and it's got a nice recruiting base in New Jersey and New York, and it can go into Pennsylvania, it's also in the Big Ten East, which means that year in and year out, it's going to be going up against Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, and Penn State. At least Illinois being in the West, you've got Wisconsin, you've got Northwestern and Nebraska, but and Iowa, but year in and year out, these aren't the juggernauts that those teams in the East are. So there's at least a more of a chance to think that you might win a division 1 year, whereas at Rutgers, you're pretty much hoping for 7-5 in a bowl game.
Tom Fornelli, CBSSports.com, with us here talking college football on 720 WGN. My name is Mark Harmon. Tom, where does Northwestern end up, and where do you think they deserve to be?
I do not think they're going to get the Rose Bowl bid.
Really?
I think that if Iowa loses to Michigan State in the Big Ten title game, I think it's going to be down to Ohio State and Iowa for that Rose Bowl spot. And if Iowa beats Michigan State, then Michigan State's definitely taking that Rose Bowl spot. Northwestern's had a very good year. It's 10-2. It's got wins over Stanford and Wisconsin. But at the same time, it's not a great team, or at least I don't think Northwestern is as good as its record reflects, because that's a really good record. But if you look at it, the offense, if you look at every major statistic,
Northwestern's
offense is pretty much the worst in the Big Ten in every single stat that you'd want to look at to judge an offense. Special teams are average. They're not great. It's the defense that's been very strong, which is why when you look at this team and how it's done over the year in wins, until it beat Illinois on Saturday by 10 points, it was the first time Northwestern had beaten anybody by double digits since a 27-0 win over Minnesota earlier in the year, and then beat Eastern Illinois 41-0. And when you look at its two losses, when it played Michigan and Iowa, two of the better teams in the Big Ten, it lost one game 38-0, and it lost the other 40-10. So I feel like this is a good Northwestern team. It's a solid Northwestern team. It's a very good defense that props it up. But it's not quite as good as that 10-2 record suggests. So I have a hard time seeing this team getting to the Rose Bowl no matter what happens. But that being said, it's still going to end up in one of those Florida Bowls on New Year's Day, which for Northwestern, that's a very, very nice destination to end up in.
So you don't see them falling out of the Outback Bowl and going like Tax Slayer January 2 Bowl?
No. I think your Outback, your Capital One type of position, that's probably going to be against an SEC team in Florida is probably where Northwestern is going to end up, which will give them a chance to add a nice SEC pelt to the wall.
Yeah, and win 11 games for the first time. Let's talk Les Miles, and I just find the whole booster buying Les Miles $15 million out, it makes me have to take a shower when I talk college football, Tom. I mean, it's how can that be the case when you've got such a the players love him, the fans love him? How do we get to the point where in the third quarter that they finally decide after the Tigers beat Texas A&M that, yeah, Les, you can stick around after all the success he's had there?
Well, Les Miles' buyout just shows you the importance of having a good agent, first and foremost, because that's pretty nice if you can get fired from your job and get $15 million to go away. But I don't believe Joe Eleva for a second when he says that they came to the decision during the third quarter. If you looked closely on Saturday morning, there were reports before the game started at 11 that Jimbo Fisher had told Florida State that he was going to be staying at Florida State. He wasn't going to be leaving for any other job. And Jimbo Fisher had been the rumored target for LSU, which is why they were going to get rid of Les Miles. And then about an hour after that report comes out, more reports start coming out of Baton Rouge saying, hey, you know what? If Les Miles wins today, he might save his job. So that tells me that Joe Eleva was going hard after Jimbo Fisher. And when Jimbo Fisher told him no, all of a sudden Les Miles is still going to be the coach at LSU. And it was just Eleva botched this thing from the very beginning, because this has been going on for 3 weeks. And Eleva never came out, never said a word, never denied any of the rumors, never came out and even gave a false vote of confidence, didn't say anything, sat in silence for 3 weeks while all these rumors circulated. Les Miles had to answer all these questions at his press conference about his future. And then finally last night, Joe Eleva comes out and says, oh yeah, he's our coach, he's not going anywhere, which lets you know who was the source of all these Les Miles is going to be getting fired rumors the last 3 weeks. It was a horrible job. And frankly, if I'm Les Miles right now, we saw Georgia come open this morning when Georgia fired Mark Richt.
Yeah.
USC job is open. If I'm Les Miles, after the way I've been treated at LSU the last 3 weeks, I have my agent on the phone calling USC, calling Georgia, gauging their interest and seeing what they're willing to do. Because at this point, I might say, you know what, LSU, I don't need you as much as you need me, and then move on.
I would support that 100%. That would be awesome. And as far as Georgia goes, how do you fire Mark Richt? I mean, you're talking about SEC championships, and I know it's been a while, but he's got a couple of them in 02 and 05. He's got a clean program. Yeah, you're not as good as the top of the SEC, but you're right there. I mean, how do you fire that guy?
I don't support it. I sort of understand where they're coming from, simply because, you know, this is a team that should, in an SEC East that the last few years has really been just down. You know, the SEC West has been propping up that conference for the last 5 years. The SEC East has been very winnable, and Georgia really hasn't taken advantage of it. But still, if you look at the history of Georgia football before Mark Richt came there all the way back in 2001, it's not like Georgia was a program that was winning national titles every year. It only has a couple of national titles in the 100-year history of the school. And in the SEC in particular, when Richt came, they started having more success than they probably had in the 20 to 30 years before it, for the most part, except when Herschel Walker was at the school. So Richt is probably the most successful, best coach that Georgia's ever had, and I think they're a little too eager to get rid of him, and I think this could be a case of buyer beware. Like, if you look at Nebraska, if you stick in the Big Ten, Bo Pelini kept having really good seasons at Nebraska. Nebraska thought they could do better. Got rid of Bo Pelini, brought in Mike Riley, and now they're finishing 5-7.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen to Georgia, because Georgia's just got too much talent. I think right now that it's available, it's the best job available in the state. I think it's a better job for USC. So I think they're going to have the pick of the litter of their coaches. It's just, I don't know if whoever they hire is actually going to be able to do a better job than Mark Richt did.
Yeah, that's, I mentioned that at the start of the show. Mark D'Antonio, Kirk Ferentz, these guys, a lot of boosters wanted them out, and they stuck around. And look at Michigan State, and look at Iowa, even Northwestern too, a couple down years, and then Fitz has them back winning 10 games. Tom, great stuff. Really appreciate you jumping on, and you're a phenomenal Twitter follow. You just spewed out more stats in the last half hour as I'm looking at you, at Tom Fornelli, Fornelli, than I think is capable in humankind here. You're an amazing man, Tom.
Thank you very much. I agree with you, and thank you for having me.
Have a good day, Tom. Thanks, man.
You too, Mark.
Tom Fornelli with us on 720 WG. I mean, this guy, I'm telling you, check out, if you're on Twitter and you're into that thing, he's got more stats on who did what throughout college football that are, if you're a stat geek like I can occasionally be, it's some good fun there. All right, final timeout. I got a really fun thing to close up the show here, and it involves Tim Tebow. I suggest you stick around. 720 WGN.
Well, I believe in the soul. The small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft wet kisses that last 3 days. Good night.
That's my guy, everyone's guy, Crash Davis, Bull Durham, one of the fine ones. You might ask why we are playing that. Well, before I get to my Tim Tebow, we wanted to give credit, one thing I forgot today. The minor league home run king, Mike Hessman. You may not have heard of Hessman before today. I certainly hadn't. But Hessman is retiring, and he's going to pursue a career as a coach. He confirmed his decision to the Associated Press. Hessman became the career home run leader for U.S.-based minor leagues. This was back in August when he hit his 433rd home run that passed Buzz Arlett. Hessman was 37 years old. He played 109 games in the big leagues over those 15 years, a 15th round pick back in 1996 by the Atlanta Braves, and he was often compared to Crash Davis. Hessman, we see you here in Chicago. Last 2 years, he was with AAA Toledo with the Tiger system, hit 237, 16 bombs, 57. Can you imagine? Guy's been in the minor leagues for 16 years, hitting 433 bombs. At the very least, we can mention him here at the end of the Beat Show. So congratulations to you, Mike Hessman. We wish you a very fruitful coaching career. Now, to my Tim Tebow, who has allegedly been dumped because Tim Tebow would not have sex with his girlfriend, who was Miss USA Olivia Culpo, who has reportedly broken up, as they write, with the football enthusiast, thank you, over a lack of sex. A source says he was really into her. A source close to the model told us he was sending her love letters and cute notes and professing his love, but she had to break up with him because she just couldn't handle it. He still hits her up, but she couldn't deal with the sex thing. He's pretty adamant about it, I guess. And here's my message, and to myself, by the way, because I try to do the same things, and to Olivia Culpo. We have known pretty much since the beginning of Tim Tebow that he is a very religious man, and he is saving himself for marriage. That is his choice, and he is entitled to make it. Why Culpo, who is a beautiful woman, and who I would give my entire life savings to spend a couple days with, could think, though, that she could change Tim Tebow? You got to know what you're going into. If you're dating Tim Tebow, you're not going to get the home run ball, if you will, until you are wedded up. And Tebow's going to hold the cards on when that is. So you have to be okay with it. It can't be a surprise. And I appreciate, I suppose, that Culpo thought that love could win out. But at the end of the day, she wanted a little nookie. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you can't, don't think, women, you just can't think you can change men. If you got a guy who's watching TV all day long, you think because he loves you so much, he's going to stop, or he's going to exercise more, he's going to eat healthier, he's going to work harder. It's not going to happen. We do what we do. The jackal, Mike Jacobson, will always be the jackal. He's going to have his coffee. He's going to do a million other things that I won't mention right now. He's going to do that. And myself, the same way. You can't, Culpo, you're a beautiful woman. You can have whoever you want. If sex is important to you, don't pick Tim Tebow. I know he's a great-looking guy and got a lot of dough, and I'm sure he's got all sorts of great morals, too. But you can't change men. That's my message to end the beat. 720 WGN.